even though we recite the entire Shir HaSayam, Oz Yashir, the song of the sea, every day as part of Psukei Dezimra, but that is not from the main part of davening. That's the introduction to davening. It's not a halacha that you have to say it there every day. But in Kriya Shema, in the brachos of Kriya Shema, before Shemoneh Esrei, we allude to the song, and at night we quote three verses from it, and in the daytime two verses. At night we say, Umalchuso baratzon kiblu aleihem, Moshe v'nei Yisrael l'cho anu shira, they accepted God's kingdom upon them, and Moshe and B'nai Yisrael sang a song, the Simcha Rabbah, with great happiness, the Omru Chulam, and they said, Mi chamocha ba'ilim Hashem, mi chamocha neder ba'kodesh, nora sehilo so seitela. Who is like you in the strong ones, in the gods, powers, God, who is like you wrapped in holiness, nora sehilos, it is a fear we have to say your praises for fear that we will shortchange you. O Seifele, God does wondrous things. That's one sentence from the Shira. Then we say, Malchus Haro Vanecha, your children saw your kingdom, Bokei Ayom Lifnei Moshe, and you split the sea before Moshe, Zekeli, is an allusion to another sentence from the Shira. Zekeli the Anveyu, this is my God, and I will glorify him, right? Zekeli, Anu, they answered Zekeli, the Amru, and they said, a third sentence, Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Voed, that God will reign forever. So three sentences are mentioned from the Shira. Mi Chamocha, Zekeli, and Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Voed. It would seem that these sentences represent the essence of what the song is all about, what the basis of this song is supposed to convey. It's found in these three sentences. In the morning, it's interesting, we only mention two of those sentences. What do we say in the morning? We say, Tehilos Lekele Yon Baruchu Mevorach, right? Praises to the high God, right? May he be blessed. Moshe b'nei Yisrael l'cha nu shira. Moshe b'nei Yisrael sang to you a song. The simcha rabba, with great happiness, same thing. The amru chulam, and they said, micha mocha b'ilim Hashem. That sentence. Then it says, shira chadosha, shibchu ge'ulim l'shimcha asfas hayam, yachad kulam hodu v'himlichu v'amru Hashem imloch v'olam v'ed. Which sentence is not alluded to? Zekeli. There we don't mention in the morning why Zekeli Vandei. We only allude to two of the sentences in the Shira, not the third. So we need to understand two things. Why are these three sentences the essence of the Shira? What was achieved when they saw the splitting of the Red Sea? The basic inspiration and influence was these three sentences. And why do we only mention all three at night and not in the daytime? In the daytime, we only mention two of them. So, what I want to say is the following. The impact of Kriyas Yamsuf was to impress upon the world, the Egyptian and the Jews, that there's a God in the world. In fact, it was a throwback to creation. The creation regarding human beings was when God took the waters and he split them, basically, and created dry land. And he put the waters into the sea and made place for human beings to then be able to have a place to exist in this world. Nobody witnessed that. So God said, I'm going to show the world my act of creation vis-a-vis human beings. And I'm going to make dry land where there was sea. And I'm going to make it for the people who deserve that dry land, who do my will. And for the people who go against my will, I'm going to take that dry land from under their feet and make it sea again and drown them. So it was mamish, a reenaction of creation. So strong that it says that they reached a level where they could point and say, this is my God. A handmaiden at the sea saw, meaning she understood and comprehended the existence of God so clearly, more clearly than Yechezkel saw it. So it was clear, it was real, they could point with their finger, not there was anything to see, but the influence, the inspiration, the feeling that really this is God, and not only that, I have a connection with him, he has a connection with me, this is really my God, that was the ultimate result of Kriyas Yamsuf. And that's what it says. The Yadu, even the Egyptians saw it. The Yadu Mitzrayim Ki Ani Hashem. Both the Egyptians who survived in Egypt and the ones who drowned. Both of them saw it. That was the major, what's it called, impact of Kriyas Yamsuf. What does that mean? They recognize Zekeli. This is my God. I feel there's a God in the world, and he's my God. What does that mean? The word tail means a strong one. It has three connotations. One connotation is that God is the power of all powers, meaning that all powers that exist in the world emanate from God. God is the source of all power in the world. All existence comes from God. That's tail, one thing. And that's why other powers are called elim. They're also powers, but God is the source of all powers. Secondly, El means that God is not only the source of all powers, but he's the mashgiach. He directs and guides everything in the world. He's the director and the guider of the world. That's also included in Kael. He's the mashgiach. He has divine providence. He oversees and guides the world. And lastly, he's my individual power. Without God, I'm nothing. Personally. So when they said Zekeli, they recognized all three things. God is the source of all existence. He's the source of my specific existence. I'm nothing without him. And he guides and directs everything that happens in the world. Those three things. That's what they were impressed with. So that was automatic. Zekeli, when they saw the splitting of the Red Sea, it impressed them with that concept. Okay? Now, once they came to that concept, they wanted to hold on to it. They didn't want it to be something that was just for a fleeting moment because of the impact of the miracle. They wanted now to do something to be able to hold on to it. As David HaMelech says, Miyale Bahar Hashem, who will ascend the mountain of Hashem? That's one step, getting up there. But Miyakum Bimkom Kacho, even more important, is who's going to stay there? Sometimes you can jump up a level and get there, but then you don't do anything to stay there. You don't perpetuate that level, and you fall backwards, and you lose it. It becomes a very temporal, fleeting thing. So the Jewish people, when they said Zekeli, they wanted to then, at that moment, accept upon themselves things that would help to perpetuate and preserve that feeling that they had. So what did they say? The Anveihu. Those three revelations. God is the source of all power and strength. God is the source of my power and strength. And God guides and directs everything in the world. They decided to preserve in three different ways. The first way, Va'andehu, some of them are partial, the Targum says, means, I will build him a Beis HaMikdash. Va'andehu. I'll create an atmosphere, a framework, an environment within which I can constantly feel God's presence. That's the Beis HaMikdash. So I'm not going to let it just be now just for this second when I saw the sea split. I'm going to try to continue it on. That Mikdash is an environment, a place with all the different kinds of kelim where you feel intellectually. You go to the Beis HaMikdash, that's where the Torah is disseminated, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah. Torah comes from the Mikdash. It's a place where you daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can feel with all the different things that represent godliness in the Mikdash. All the different kelim, the Aron and the Mizbeach and the Shulchan and the Menorah. You feel God's presence intellectually, and you feel it that God is the source of existence of the whole world, because the Mikdash is a small world. But in addition, it's something personal. Judaism has the ability to be individualized. It's not just conformity, everybody doing the same thing. But in that Mikdash, everybody has their different place, different kli, different portion of the Torah, where they feel closer to. So in the intellectual perpetuation, preservation of this feeling of God's presence, of putting it into an environment called a Mikdash with all the different kalim, everybody has a different kli, a different part of that Mikdash that speaks to his neshama specifically. So on the one hand, it's a preservation of this feeling, but it's my God. My personal relationship with God is also preserved in this Mikdash, where I find my place in this global, generic place, but everybody finds their specific place within it. That's the first thing. Second thing is the anave osoba mitzvos. Anveyu also means I will beautify God through the mitzvos, his mitzvah. I'll do mitzvahs in a beautiful way. This is preserving it, not intellectually, but aesthetically, emotionally. How do you see God in the world? Through his mitzvahs, his will of what you're supposed to do in this world. His mitzvahs represent his will. It's another way of continuing and preserving that feeling of God's presence. And you want the mitzvahs to be aesthetically attractive, because then you'll feel a connection to them. So you do the mitzvahs in an aesthetic way, and aesthetics is very subjective. What I consider beautiful, you may consider ugly. It's a very subjective, personalized kind of thing. So I preserve my feeling of God's presence as the one who, what's it called, who's my personal God, by my subjective, aesthetic, emotional relationship to God's will of doing the mitzvah in a way that attaches it to me and makes it beautiful to me and to others. So that is the second aspect. The second aspect of Kaili, my individual God who gives me personally strength. That's something that's an emotional attachment. That's through Hidur Mitzvah. And finally, Ani Vahu, the third meaning of Anveihu, is me and him. Emulate God, Midos. That I emulate God's character traits. He's merciful, I'm merciful. He's gracious, I'm gracious. Ani Vahu. That is more of a behavioral connection. I behave like God behaves. Okay, so I'm attaching myself intellectually through the Mikdash, emotionally through Hidur Mitzvah, through the aesthetics of a mitzvah, and behaviorally through emulating God's Midos. And in the Midos also, everyone is different. Everyone has a different personality. Everybody has to emphasize different Midos, accentuate and emphasize some, and minimize others. So everybody's different. Everybody has to work within their character. So all these three things preserve the Zek Kaili. This is my individual God. I have a personal connection. I feel his closeness. Kriyas Yamsu brought me to that, to preserve it and to perpetuate it. I'm going to put it in a Mikdash environment. I'm going to do Hidur Mitzvah, and I'm going to emulate God. That will help to preserve my feeling of God being my personal God and feeling his closeness. But there's something more than that. That's my perception of God individually. But there's a higher perception. Elokei Avi Varomimenu. He's the God of my father. And that will uplift him even greater. Varomimenu. Because my experience is limited to my experience. But the Avos' experience of their connection to God is something that affected the Jewish people for all time. We benefit that, and their relationship was on a much higher level than our relationship can be. So even though people can have a unique, individualistic approach to Yiddishkeit, it has to be based on the foundation of the avos. It can be an enhancement of tradition, but it can't create new tradition. Because if it starts with me, I am creating my own individual Judaism. It's not Judaism. Judaism is what was the relationship that God had with the avos. You can make that personalized, put your signature on it, and enhance it individually. But you can't have a totally individualistic perspective of Judaism. It has to be based on Mesorah. That's the idea. And that Mesorah will elevate your relationship with God because you inherit the ability to observe the avos relationship with God, which is a much higher level than your relationship to God. So on the one hand, there's a mila of feeling it individually, having an individualistic approach. At the same time, it has to be grounded and rooted in the avos. That's Zekei Livyan. Ve'yu Elokei Ovi Ba'arom Emenu. Now, after Klal Yisrael reached this level in the, what's it called, in the, from Kriyas Yamsu. This was not necessarily what they just reflected what level they reached. When they saw the sea split, they said, Zekeli, they pointed, there he is, there's God. It wasn't what they said that made it happen, what they said just represented what happened. And then they wanted to perpetuate it, so at the moment that they said it and saw it, they put it into a perspective where it could last. That's this pasuk. What came from that? We say, Ein kelokeinu, Ein kadodeinu, and then we say, Mi kelokeinu. There's none like God. Then we say, who's like God? So Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld said the following. First, you have to come to realization that there's none like God. I accept. Right? God is the only one. Then you can start comparing who is like God and make all the comparisons, and by investigation and comparison you can come to a higher understanding of God. But you can't make those comparisons till you accept the fact that there's none like God. First it's Ein Kelokei. Then you're allowed to ask Mi Kelokei. Same thing over here. First you have to say Zekei Li V'Anveyu Elokei Aviv Aro Mimenu, and then you can say Mi Chomoko Bo'eli Mashiach. Now if I accept and I understand that God is everything, then who is like? There's nothing like him. And I can now say, this one's not like him, this one's not like, and make investigation and comparisons, because I'm set. I know that there's a God. I'm not making these investigation comparisons to believe in God. I believe in him. After the belief, now these investigations and comparisons will even make it better. So, Mi Chomocha Bo'elim Hashem, who is like God in powers? Once I accept that God is the only power, then I can say, well, he is the only power, and surely other powers that seem to be powers are nothing compared to him because of this reason, that reason, the other one. Mi chamocha ba'ilim Hashem. Mi chamocha neder ba'kodesh. That's the first thing in Zekeli. There's no one like him. Because all the other things that you could think is like him is not because of this and that reason or whatever the other reason is. After you accepted that there's nothing else. And neder b'kodesh, is nothing like him, wrapped, right, in holiness. That's the Elokei Aviv Aro Mimenu. My forefathers had this holy connection to God. There's nothing else in the world that reflects that holiness except that relationship. Once I accept that, now I can investigate and understand why there's nothing else, why the other things don't meet up, measure up. No rasehilo, so now I can go to the next level. That no matter what I think I understand, both from a positive standpoint and from a process of elimination of the negative, no rasehilos, God is terrible in giving him praise. It's a terror to give him praise. It's a scare because you're always afraid that you're going to shortchange the praise. You never can really understand. So I come to the next level where as much as I can understand and think I can point, and I understand why God is everything and why there's nothing else. Still, that's all limited to my understanding. There's something way beyond that. No rasehilos. God is beyond praise because whatever praise you can say shortchanges him. O seitelen, he does things that are hidden, wondrous, beyond my comprehension. That is what the Shira led people to. The initial influence, the initial impact That led us to say, once I have that recognition, now I can say, I can now investigate whatever. And that led us to the third thing. Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Vo'ed. All this is my recognition, our recognition as a people. Right? All the way back from the Avos and individually my personal recognition. But it's missing something. Because the whole world should recognize that, and it doesn't. We say that in Shema Yisrael. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, God who is our personal God now, the God of the Jews, and not accepted by much of the world. One day that God will be accepted by the whole world. One day God will be one. And that's the same thing over here. The same thing we say, Yimloch Hashem Li'olam Elokayich Tzion, Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Vo'ed, that's what they said. Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Vo'ed, God will rule forever. Meaning, Hashem Yimloch Li'olam, over the entire world, and Vo'ed forever. So, my recognition, and the Jewish people's recognition, is only partial, because we hope that the day will come when the whole world will recognize that. That is the Shira. God impressed us with His existence, His power in the world, purpose of the world, divine providence, because that's the idea of emulating God's midos, how He functions, His guidance of the world, that's how I'm supposed to reciprocate. And the mikdash is feeling that God is the power of all powers, and the hiddur mitzvah, that God is power of me specifically. That was the initial impact of Kriyas Yamsuf. It led people to the next level of realizing that there's nothing else, and it's beyond our comprehension, and someday the whole world will understand that. That was the Shira. That's why those three sentences. Now, in the morning, we relive Kriyas Yamsuf every day. We relive the experience. When you relive the experience in the daytime, when it's light, when it happened, okay? So then we say, Tehilos v'kel elyon baruch, we're going to give praise to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Why? Because we're reliving what happened when Moshe Bnei Yisrael echanu shira. And they said, Micha Mocha. And you don't have to say Zekeli, because you're reliving it. That's an experience. You're experiencing what you can point. You're re-experiencing the Kriyas Yamsuf. You're supposed to be able to put yourself back into time and experience the splitting of the Red Sea. So it's automatic. You don't have to say Zekeli. It's automatic. Zekeli. That's what Kriyas Yamsuf is. So we don't mention the sentence. What we mention is once they saw Zekeli, what did they say? Michamokha. And they said Hashem Nimloch Le'olam Vo'ed. And that's why in the morning refer to the Jewish people as Geuli. Shira Chadosha Shibchu Geuli. Because once we redeem from Egypt, we are redeemed forever. Even in Golis, we're still redeemed. What was accomplished by Yetzias Mitzrayim was never abrogated. We remain Geuli, even in Golis. We're still basically free people. We have the Torah. The Goyim can enslave our bodies, but they can never enslave us. We're still free people. We're ge'ulim. But there is a difference at night. At night, we don't relive Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's nighttime. It's in the morning is Emes V'Yatziv. It's true. We see it. We relive it. At night, it's Emes V'Emunah. We believe what happened then, but we don't relive it ourselves. So at night, we're called Bani. Malchus Chara'u Vanecha. Banecha is only in, not in Golis. In Golis we're called Avodim, we're called God's servants. We're called His children, not in Golis. So we're talking about what they did. They who were called Banim, they experienced this, they said this, so it's not that we're experiencing it, so we have to quote what happened to them. Zekeli on Uviyomu, they said Zekeli Ben Veil. We're not experiencing it. They experienced it, so we mentioned it. And then we mentioned, from that experience, they came to Micha Mocha, and they came to Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Vo'ed, but we're speaking about the past, we're not speaking about the present, we're not experiencing the present. That's why at night, we end with the Ne'amar Kifada Hashem Es Yaakov, the past. It says that God redeemed the Jewish people in the past, and we bless Him, Goal Yisrael, that He redeemed the Jewish people. In the morning, we have a tefillah for the future. Tzur Yisrael, Kuma Be'ezras Yisrael, Ufedeichin Umecha. We're living this in the present, and we're asking that it be continued in the future. It's not just what happened in the past. So when you're talking about what happened in the past, you have to mention everything. When you're talking about reliving it in the present, you don't have to mention what you're reliving. You don't have to re-mention what did that bring them to. Michamocha and Hashem Yimlofli Olam Vo'ed. The thing that this has a connection to Tu B'Shvat, I want to speak about Tu B'Shvat separately, but this also has a connection. It says that what's it called, that the trees in Gan Eden were vehicles to come to a recognition of God. Every tree had some different thing about godliness that you would get from eating the fruit and studying the tree, and by studying nature and by eating the fruit, you came to an awareness of the Ribbono Shel Olam who made those trees. They were quasi-spiritual, physical trees. And there are three ideas in a tree. There's the trunk, limbs of the tree, there's the leaves, and there's the fruit. The fruit represents behavior, action. The fruit of one's labor, the fruit of what he does, that's your actions, behavior. That's one way of preserving your awareness of God through the tree, through the, what's it called, the fruit. Then there's the concept of the environment of the tree, which is the limbs and the trunk. The environment itself tells you something about godliness. And then there's the leaves. The leaves are the beauty of the tree. Right? The tree without leaves is ugly. When the leaves are there, it looks impressive. Those are the three things that preserve an awareness of God. The first is action, emulate God, ani vahu, that va'anvehu. The second is the beauty, the leaves. And the third thing is the fruit, the action, what's it called, the fruit is the action. And then the atmosphere, the environment of the tree, the limbs, the trunk, which is the Beit HaMikdash, I'll build him a place where the environment will be conducive to recognize the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay, so that's from this sefer. Now let me tell you something that's relevant to Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah of trees. Like we said, trees are compared to human beings. And from a tree, a person can come to an awareness of what his purpose is, and like we said, an awareness of the Ribbono Shel Olam too. I want to now go to the other part, awareness of who you are and what. The word eitz, there's two names for trees, eitz and ilan. Eitz is spelled ayin tzadik, and ilan is aleph yud lamed nun. Let's start with the eitz. The word eitz, if you vocalize the letters, means something. Ayin tzadik. Look, you'll see a tzadik. It's even interesting. The letters ayin and tzadik with the tagim, with the crowns, look like trees. They look like two limbs out with a root down and little hairs coming up, what's it called, like the leaves. That's an H. Ayin, look, tzadik, you'll see a tzadik. That is what's it called, a tree. Now, how in the world, if you look at a tree, and the H is the configuration of the tree, because H means wood, lumber. So, even lumber is called H. So, if you look at the configuration of the tree, not the fruit-bearing quality of the tree, just the configuration, you'll see a tzadik. How? The Gemara says that people are compared to trees. Says the Maral, it's true, but not exactly. Because the truth is, we're like upside-down trees. We'd look more like a tree if we stood on our head. Our limbs would be up, the root would be down, we'd look like a tree. We're inverted trees. We're standing on our limbs. Why? Because the tree is a physical thing, and it's rooted in the physical world. So its root is down, and its limbs are up. But we are a spiritual being, the Iker. We're rooted in the heavens, so we're growing down from Shamayim, not growing up from the ground because we're not physical beings. So our root comes from the heavens. It's just we stand on our feet in this physical world because we're in a physical world. It would follow from that if we were in a spiritual world, we walk on our heads like a tree, the root down and the limbs up. It's just that since we're growing from the up, down, from the heavens, we walk upside down in this world. And I found a few sources that in the spiritual world, people walk on their head. One source, it says that when Rivka Imenu saw Yitzchak for the first time, she fell off the camel. she was astounded about something. The Medrash says in Paneach Raza that Yitzchak Avinu actually died by the Akedah and had to be resurrected. He died out of fright. His neshama just left him. And God put him into Gan Eden for 3 years to recuperate. The moment he exited Gan Eden is the moment that Rivka saw him. At that moment he was coming out of Gan Eden. And the Medrash says, as is well known, people in the spiritual world work on their heads. And Yitzchak was still walking on his head when Rivka saw him the first time. And I guess if she saw her husband for the first time walking on his head, she was astounded. Somebody once told me that's why she fell off the camel. She wanted to get on her head so she could be a good cow and be looked just like the husband, walking on her head too. What? The Paneach Raza. Who says what? That she wanted to fall on her head? Somebody told me that this year. That I once mentioned this idea. I think his name was, Rav David Carman from Rehovot who told me that. In any case, it says that there's a lot of different ideas. The Gemara says that in Olam HaEmes, it's Olam Hafuch, it's an upside-down world, which one interpretation is this idea that people walk on their heads. Another idea where you find is when the witch brought up Shmuel, he came up upside down. Could be that that's why children are born head first. They're coming from a spiritual world. They're coming into this world upside down. In any case, that's the reason why when we want to maintain a spiritual posture in this physical world, we take off our shoes and we cover our head. Why? Because then you know which is the root and which is the limb. The limb of a tree is uncovered. The root is what's covered. To accentuate that this is our root, except we're rooted in the heavens, not on the earth. And that's why we're standing straight up with our root facing the heavens. We cover our head and we take off our shoes to show that that's only the limb. That's not the root, even though that's what's on the ground. That's what's down. So if you look at a tree and then you look at a person, you understand that the root of the person, just like the root of the tree, is rooted in its, where it comes, emanates from. So he emanates from the spiritual world. That's the root. That's the main thing. The limb is a secondary thing. That's in the physical world. So if you look at a tree and you look at a person, you'll know what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is a person who's rooted in the heavens, not in the physical world. That's ayin tzaddik. Look, you'll see the tzaddik. Now let's take the word ilan. Ilan is a tree that bears fruit. And even though the Gemara speaks about ilanei srak, there are barren ilanos, so it seems to be that a tree that doesn't bear fruit is also called an ilan. But the Gemara says clearly that la'asid lava, when Mashiach comes, all the ilanei srak will bear fruit. That means that there are trees that are potentially fruit-bearing trees that don't bear fruit in this world, but eventually will. They're called ilanei srak. They're ilanos, but in this world they're srak. They're barren. So the ilan more or less represents the fruit-bearing quality of the tree. Now, I'll tell you something that once hit me, this inspiration, a few years ago. I was driving my car, and it's a very interesting thing. Take the word ilan, separate the aleph, put it in your pocket. What are you left with? Yod, lamed, nun. Add those letters together to make one letter. Yod is 10, lamed is 30, is 40, nun is 50, is 90. Which letter is 90? Tzadik. Take the aleph out of your pocket and put it back to the combination of the yud, lamed, nun, which is a tzaddik. What word do you get? Eitz, aleph, tzaddik. Except not eitz, ayin, tzaddik, but aleph, tzaddik. So an ilan is aleph, tzaddik. What does aleph mean? Ayin means to look. Aleph means to learn. Alof, bina. In modern Hebrew, iluf is training dogs, is iluf klavim. La'aleif means to learn, to train. Learn about the tree, and you'll see what a tzaddik is. Aleph, tzaddik. Learn, you'll see a tzaddik. Looking at the tree, you can look at the tree and see a tzaddik. Here you have to learn about the fruit to see the tzaddik. What does learning about the fruit tell you about a tzaddik? So the idea is the following. The Meiri says that Olam Haba is not a different world. It's the fruit of this world. In other words, in this world, you plant the seeds, prune, plow, fertilize, do all the work, and you reap the fruit in the next world. That's what this world is all about. A tzaddik understands that this world is a place to create fruit. It's not the place to enjoy. It's not the end goal itself. It's the means to reach the goal. That is called a fruit existence. You put in work now for a future benefit. Whereas the other philosophy of life is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. The purpose of this world is immediate gratification. And that was the difference between Esav and Yaakov. Esav was a hunter. A hunter wants to go into the forest, kill an animal, and eat it. Doesn't want to know from the animal before it can benefit him. Yaakov was a shepherd. A shepherd raises the animal, puts a lot of work in for a future benefit. That's the difference between Esav and Yaakov. Is this world a place to prepare for a future benefit or immediate gratification? So if you look and consider the concept of fruit, you'll see what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is a person who's willing to put in work in this world for a future benefit of the world to come, which is the fruit of this world. Now the Torah gave us four mitzvahs, trumas and maisvahs, to be able to put that philosophy into practice. In other words, the philosophy that this world is not the goal in itself, it's a means to reach a greater goal of Olam Haba. What mitzvahs help us do that? The mitzvahs of trumas and maisvahs with fruit in Eretz Yisrael. First mitzvah is truma. What is truma? You take the first and you dedicate it to God, you give it to the Kohen. Why? If you want to have this philosophy that this world is a place to work, create for the future of Olam Haba, then you have to take every physical thing and not use it for your own immediate gratification, but dedicate it to you somehow for something more sublime in service of God. So you start the first, and you dedicate the first to God. Okay, that's truma. Then comes Maaser Rishon, the first tenth. You dedicate the tenth to God. Why ten? Ten represents the unity of all the separate things, the goal. God was one when he created the world. Then he created all these many things, a lot of things. What's the goal? That all these many things should unite under God and again come back to his unity. Everything should unite under God. That's the goal of the world. Everything uniting, the Yayosu Kulam Aguda Echas, everything should unite into one unity and represent God's unity. What number represents that unity? 10. Because up until 10, every integer is separate. 10 is a unit of all the integers in one new unit. The next number is not 11. It's not a new number. It's Achadesre. 10 plus 1. The unit stays the same. That's why a minion is 10. A minion is 10 individuals that make up one unit. In Arabic numbers, 10 is 1 10 and 0 1s. The unit remains. So first you dedicate the first to God, and then when you get to the 10th, you dedicate that to God too. That's why the 10th is always holy. Right? The 10th of Tishrei is Yom Kippur, and Asiri Kodesh. The tenth of the animals is the one that's Maaser. 10 is always a holy number because it represents the unity of many separate things, which represents the unity of God. So you dedicate the first and you dedicate the goal. But just dedicating is not enough. You have to know how to dedicate it, how to use it in service of God. Okay, I'm dedicated to use the world in service of God. How do you do that? You have to learn. Learn Torah. Torah will teach you how to use the physical world in service of God. That's Maaser Sheni. Second Maaser. You take a tenth and you eat it in Yerushalayim. And the Torah says the reason for it. Leman tilmad l'yiras Hashem Elokecha. In order that you should learn to serve God. How do you learn to serve God or to fear God? By eating your Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, says Tosfos. In Yerushalayim was the Sanhedrin, so all the Gedolim were there. The Beis Hamikdash, so all the Kohanim and Levim were there. All the yeshivas, Kimitzion Teitzei Torah, were in Yerushalayim. So when a person brought his Maaser to Yerushalayim and he spent a few days there at least, maybe weeks, eating his Maaser, he had nothing else to do. So he went, stopped into the yeshiva, stopped and spoke to the Kohanim, met some of the Gedolim, and he sat and learned Torah. And he was inspired with the Torah of Yerushalayim. He learned how to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's Maaser Sheni. And lastly is Maaser Ani. It alternates. The first 2 years of Shemitah is Maaser Rishon and Maaser Sheni. The third year is Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani. The fourth and fifth year again goes back to Maaser Rishon and Maaser Sheni. The sixth year again is Maaser Ani and Maaser Rishon. And the seventh year is Shemitah, there's no Maaser. What's Maaser Ani? You support other people. It's not enough to dedicate your life to God. You have to teach others and help them do it too. If they need to be supported physically, materially, do that. If they need to be supported spiritually, do that. You can't just worry about yourself. Your goal has to be to dedicate everything to God, to learn how to do it, and to teach others, and to help others do it. To help others have the wherewithal to do it. That's Maaser Ani. It's interesting that the Maaser Sheni, which you bring to Yerushalayim and eat yourself, is the first 2 years. And Maaser Ani is only the third year. Shouldn't it be the opposite? First 2 years, you should give it to the Ani. And then, if you're a good guy and gave your tzedakah to the Ani, 2 years, we give you a present. The third year, you can eat yourself. That would make more sense. Why the first 2 years for yourself and only 1 year for the Ani? So, I've said an answer in the past. I just thought of one now, another one. But the answer I said in the past is the following. The main thing of giving tzedakah is not giving the Ani, because God can take care of the Ani. He doesn't need to give you to be a middleman to do for him. So why does he do it? For your sake. That you should benefit by feeling to be a giver like God. But that's only if you enjoy it, if you're happy about it. If you do it begrudgingly, you almost have no mitzvah. So therefore God said, I want you to learn how to be happy with using your money the way I tell you to use it. First 2 years, I want you to eat it in Yerushalayim. You can't do what you want with it. You have to bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. So you'll enjoy it, but you'll see you can enjoy using your money the way I tell you. And the third year, you'll learn that if I tell you to give it to this poor man, you'll enjoy it too. You'll be just as happy. But you need 2 years of preparation for that. I was just thinking now of another answer. Since the whole idea of helping the Ani is to help him dedicate his life by teaching him, by directing him, by giving him the wherewithal, first you need to know how to do it yourself. You have to learn for 2 years yourself before you can start teaching other people. First you have to know that you know before you can be mashpi on other people. So 2 years you need to learn. And then you can spread that learning and that wherewithal to other people. So that's Maaser Ani. Now the interesting point here. We said that Elon, if you combine the Yud Lamed Nun as Tzadik, is Aleph Tzadik, learn about the fruit of the tree, you'll see a Tzadik. So we said in general, learning about fruit teaches you about Olam Haba. But there's mitzvahs that back up that philosophy and put it into practice. What's it called? Dedicating the first, the tenth, learning, supporting others. What letters would represent those mitzvahs? Dedicating the first, what letter do you think would represent that? Aleph. Dedicating the tenth, which letter? Yud. Learning about, what's it called, about how to fear God. Learning, which letter? Lamed. And supporting the people who can't support themselves, they're the noflim, the people who fall. The nun in Ashrei isn't there because it represents falling. And the next letter in the Aleph phase is Somei Hashem L'cholan. God supports those that fall. The nun represents people who fall. That's why the middle letter in Ani is a nun, because that's the essence of the Ani. He's fallen. He can't support himself. So which letter would represent supporting other people? The Nun, the people who are falling. What does that spell? Aleph, Yud, Lamed, Nun, Elon. So the Elon hints to the fact that if you learn about the fruit-bearing quality of the tree, you'll see a tzaddik, and it hints to the four mitzvahs that you perform. The Aleph was Truma, the Yud is Maaser Rishon, the Lamed is Maaser Sheni, and the Nun is Maaser Ani. That spells Elon.